good girl. Love the mess, I watch the swirl of smoke from candles burning. While Mary looked up yearning, I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Trying to feel something. I came back home on one leg go. So much more for me to know. I read the dark.
And hello, this is Larry Rhodes, Doubter 5. This is the Atheist, I'm sorry, the Free Thought Radio Hour. Sorry, multitasking here. Today I have a special guest. His name is John D. Webster. He's an author. He wrote 10 Decisions I Could Have Made Better Than God. He's also a stand-up comedian. And today we'll be talking about atheism, free thought, humanism, rational thought, and science. Conversely, we'll also be talking about religion, religious faith, gods, holy books, and superstition. We'll start talking about, we'll also talk about the atheist and rationalist groups that reside here in Knox Patch and how you can connect with them. First, we'll start off talking about the Ten Commandments. No, not those Ten Commandments, the atheist Ten Commandments. John, can you give us a heads up on that?
Yes, I can. I've actually written my own version of the Ten Commandments, which was featured in a chapter in my book, 10 Decisions I Could Have Made Better Than God, and other audacious atheist articles. Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins and George Carlin have also come up with their own versions of the Ten Commandments. Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins were more original than George Carlin. What George Carlin did was basically take the Ten Commandments that exist and reduce them to one or two. But we'll be going over Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens and my versions of the Ten Commandments today.
Well, first, why don't we just take a real quick glimpse of what the real Ten Commandments, the problem with them. First of all, the first four aren't morals. They're just, I'm good. I'm the God. I'm your God. I'm the only God. And you better pay attention to me. So that's 4 out of 10 gone right there. Have nothing to do with morality.
Yep. As Louis C.K. said, one of the Ten Commandments was don't say God's name with a crappy attitude.
Okay. What's the next Ten Commandments? I mean, the next ones that we're going to look at.
Okay. We can start off with mine. My first commandment would be, thou shalt consider how your actions affect others and act accordingly. I think this is one that we all could use. Many of us are self-centered and tend to think of only ourselves. We tend to think of ourselves first and foremost and not really care about how our actions affect other people. So I think this would be a good starting point for any Ten Commandments list.
What's the next one?
The second one is, thou shalt believe what and where the evidence leads you to believe, and not just what you want to believe. I think this is a good one because many people out there believe what they want to believe, which is a problem because they are not believing what makes sense and what the evidence shows to be the case is true.
Right. The entire Bible, especially the old one, the Old Testament, is all about obeying them, and what do you have to obey them to do? Believe.
Yep.
I mean, they command that you believe. And that's not the way it works. You have to be convinced of a proposition before you can actually believe in it. Now, that doesn't work if you're dealing with an adult group generally. That's why they take you at the early stage they possibly can and command you to believe these things so that you'll grow up believing them. So I like that commandment. That's pretty good. What have you got next?
Thank you. Number three is think long-term and plan ahead. This is a good commandment because many people think to their immediate pleasure and immediate gratification and don't plan down the road as to how their actions will affect themselves and others in the long run, which is the way you should think.
Right, also, but in the Bible, or if you ask most any Christian, they'll say that you don't need to because Jesus is coming back next week. We don't have to worry about long term.
Yeah, that's one problem with the conservative Republicans is they think that, you know, at any moment Jesus is going to come back on a white horse and rapture us all, and we can do whatever we want to the earth.
We don't have to worry about global climate change either.
Yep.
In other words, that Jesus is going to come back and reset the clock, and that we don't have to worry about anything after next week. It kind of makes you wonder why they bother sending their kids to college. Yeah. I mean, with the big double whammy of Jesus is coming next week, and two, if you go to college, you lose your faith. You know, it's no wonder that one of the Republicans candidate, I don't remember who it was saying that it was a bad idea to send your kids to college. Now, that's good advice for the future of America.
I remember when I was in middle school, I was at a Southern Baptist church that I belonged to and attended. And one of the sermons that the preacher preached, he said the words, if you don't want your kids to believe in God, send them to college, which actually is a pretty true statement because one of the reasons I became an atheist was I was exposed to critical thinking and you know, actually examining what I believed. And I actually went to a Southern Baptist college, and in an intro to philosophy course I took, one of the questions was to rate ourselves, the desk in the classroom, the other students, the professor, and God in term on a scale of 1 to 10, or actually it was in order of realness, as far as, you know, what we could prove.
Realness?
They existed. Exactly, realness. You know, could we prove the desk in the classroom existed? Yes. Could we prove that we existed? Yes. Could we prove that God existed? Well, you can't really do that. And that was one of the things that led to me becoming an atheist.
Sorry, verifying it. We're going out. But I mean, there's so many college anecdotes about the atheist professor that says, you know, you can't prove God, and then the student saying, well, you can't prove you got a brain either, you know.
Yeah.
Unless you take it out and look at it. Yeah. But we have studied brains, we know they're there, etc.
One of the articles that I wrote in 10 Decisions I Could Have Made Better Than God was a look at and critique of the movie God's Not Dead, where an atheist professor basically had all the students in his philosophy course sign a declaration saying that God is dead so he can move past the arguments for and against God and get on with the class. Now, I don't know of any secular philosophy professor in the history of academia who's ever done that, but I do know that many times, including the college that I went to, which was Southern Baptist, before you were enrolled and accepted at the college, they had you sign a statement of faith where you basically agreed to certain
beliefs. You sign a paper saying I have these beliefs.
Yep.
They won't let you in the college and won't let you study there.
Yeah.
or teach there.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
And you can imagine, you know, that there are different types of colleges of all different religions all over America, and they all have their own statements of belief, you know. So you just got to wonder, which one's true? Can they all be true? No. What do they require for their belief? Faith. And with faith, you can believe anything at all. What's your next commandment you got?
Number four has to do with your resources and your money. Number four is make as much money as you can, pay your bills, do what you enjoy, save as much as reasonable, and give as much as you can. This is the important part. Give as much as you can to support and take care of others who aren't as lucky, fortunate, and who do not have as much as yourself. If this was an actual commandment, there would be a problem with adhering to it, because we have magazines like Forbes, which basically places people who hoard their wealth on a pedestal. And many people look up to billionaires who've acquired massive amounts of resources, and that money doesn't go to good use. It just sits in their bank account, and we all admire them for basically hoarding resources that could be used for good, and they don't do anything with it. It just sits in their bank account, and
yeah, so much for the trickle down effect.
Yeah, Reaganomics. Yep.
Yeah. No, I don't know how many times we hear that the 1% of the world's population controls like 80% of the resources. Turn it loose, dudes. Now let's make some use of it. We can make this world a better place.
As I've said before, nobody needs $1 billion. That's billion with a B. People pretty much use up or need $2.4 million in their lifetime. That's allotting for $30,000 a year to live on. And 80 years is the average human lifespan in the United States. And $2.4 million is pretty much all somebody needs. And that's being generous to survive on. If you make more than that, if you don't have a philanthropist in the title of things you are, then you are being selfish.
Yeah, we're talking socialism here, you know.
But of socialism, course, scary stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, matter of fact, there's an old joke that says that Republicans and conservatives put down liberals and socialists all week, and then they go on to church on Sunday and worship one.
Yep. I actually wrote an article about how Jesus was the biggest socialist, the biggest famous socialist who, I actually don't think Jesus ever existed, because Bart Ehrman says that there are no letters about Jesus during Jesus' lifetime, so I don't necessarily believe Jesus existed. But if he did exist, which he doesn't, then Jesus was probably one of the biggest socialists out there, considering the stuff that he did that is attributed to him in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in the New Testament.
Well, what gets me is that conservatives and liberals, and I mean libertarians and Republicans, praise him for just that stuff that he's did, the sharing of resources, the healing of people free, the things that he did, which are in a quote good vein to his fellow man. They praise him for that on Sunday, and then the rest of the week they would either forget all about it or actively campaign against it, which drives me crazy. And as soon as you mention that, no, this is stuff that Jesus would do, they say, no, and, you know, they make their own Jesus up in their own mind. And as far as losing religion in college, I also did that. I was a Christian believer until I was even through the Navy. I was 22 when I went to college, and still a believer. And then I met my first atheist and started taking classes on religion, sociology, psychology, and sciences, you know, anthropology, cosmology, and it all pointed to a natural universe with no real evidence coming from the other side.
I actually would like to see a counter-apologetics university or degree program started at some secular college. You have all these seminaries and these apologetics degree programs, and there isn't really any kind of counter to that in secular universities. I've actually talked to leaders in the atheist movement and asked them, you know, what they thought of the idea of creating some type of counter-apologetics degree track program, and many of them think that, you know, it's a good idea.
Yeah. This is WOZO Radio, 103.9 Low Power FM in Knoxville. We're going to take just a minute break, play a song. Last time I was here, I tried to play Atheist Funeral, but I didn't have the full song. Tonight I made sure I brought it with me, and we'll play that and get right back to our topic, Ten Commandments. Be right back. Back to the Free Thought Radio Hour. This is Larry Rhodes. My special guest is John D. Webster, author and stand-up comedian. Tonight we're talking about the Ten Commandments, and it's the atheist Ten Commandments that we're discussing tonight. So what's the next one that you have on your list there, John?
Number five is only have children if you know you are mature enough to handle the responsibility. If you have them, commit to educating yourself as much as possible about the best way in which to bring them up, and then pour everything you have into helping them become the best they can be. Teach them to be able to live without you, and then be there for them when they cannot.
I think that's good advice. I don't know how easy it'll be to implement that. And you are talking about family planning here, and we've got a whole political party against that right now. But I think it's a good idea. Prepare for children if you want them. Don't have them if you don't, or if you're not able to take care of them. And educate them. That's a big part of it.
I've actually, done my best to avoid having children because I honestly don't think I'm responsible enough to take care of a child. You know, I've seen some people who are probably more irresponsible than I would be if I had kids. But I just don't think that, you know, I have the resources right now and the ability to bring up a kid in the way I think he or she deserves to be brought up. So I've actually took my own advice on this and, you know, not had kids.
Yeah. The other side of that is, if nowadays, don't be a deadbeat dad, be there for your kids, supply the resources and the time and attention that it need, that the children need to grow up in a secure household. Getting back to a previous, getting back to a previous Ten Commandment that you just did about education and in anti-apologetics, I think that's a good idea. We need that. Matter of fact, if you're an atheist out there and listening, get a book on anti-apologetics and read it, because if you can't answer the questions, the person who is accosting you that way will think they've won and will reinforce them. There's a meme or an idea going around the atheist movement now that one cannot be argued out of a position that they were not argued into. But that's BS, because I was, many others were. They grow up in the religion, and they go to college, and they talk to people, and that's how you lose your religion. You are argued out of it. It happens every day. The Atheist Society of Knoxville is full of people who have been argued out of their religion.
And there are books out there that are good counter-apologetics groups. John W. Loftus has written 8 counter-apologetics books, 8 atheist books about religion. And David Mills has written Atheist Universe, which is, for the most part, a critique of creationism. And those are some good resources out there for you if you are interested in counter-apologetics books.
And I think it's Dr. Boghossian. I'm not sure if he has his PhD. But he's got a book out called How to Create an Atheist. It's a good read. It has a lot of good information in it. Mainly he talks about just asking questions and getting the believer to think about the actual beliefs that they carry and examine them a little bit. I wrote an article on my website, digitalfreethought.com, called Examine Your Beliefs. And I break them down into minutia that you have to evaluate each one on its own merit, and very few of them can stand on their own merit. But we've got a lot of Ten Commandments to get through here. What the next one do you have?
Okay. Number 6, I have, act as if you would be rewarded for the way you treat others. You won't be, but act as if. The reward you receive knowing you treated others as if they were yourself will far outweigh any real actual reward that could be given you. One self-help author, Brian Tracy, says that a good way to treat people and a good mindset to have regarding the way you should treat people is to treat each person you come into contact with as if they are a rich relative from whom you stand to inherit a lot of money. That may be partly selfish to do that, but it's a good mindset to have, to act as if, you know, everybody you come in contact with are a rich relative from whom you stand to receive an inheritance from.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a good idea to treat each other excellently, as Bill and Dave,
Bill and Ted, yeah.
Bill and Ted would say.
Be excellent to each other.
Yeah, that's it. And that will take you a long way. Now, this pay it forward movement is kind of an embodiment of that. When you receive a boon or a favor or some material well-being from a neighbor, friend, pay it forward. Make sure someone else benefits from their kindness, your kindness, and see what if we can make a better world. It's its own reward. Do you have another commandment?
Number 7.
Whose are these now?
These are my 10 commandments.
Yours? Okay, cool.
We have Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens to go over as well. These are mine.
Okay.
Number 7, treat others as they would like to be treated, within reason. Not everyone is like you. Not everyone wants what you want. Jesus had, or should I say the character of Jesus, had the golden rule, which is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. There is also the platinum rule, which I think is better than the golden rule, which states do unto others as they would have you do unto them, because not everybody wants to be treated the same. Some people, for example, are huggers. Some people go around hugging people they meet, and some people do not like to be hugged. Mm-hmm. So you need to find out how somebody wants to be treated, and then more or less treat them that way. However, within reason, because there are some ways people like to be treated that you may not be comfortable with treating them.
Right. In the language of S&M, you could be a top. You don't want to treat a bottom like a top. that's getting a little field here. What's the next one that you have there?
Number 8 is about education. Share with others your knowledge. If you are really good at something, show people who want to know how you did it, how it's done.
That's good. I mean, I like that. I got into computers when I was 32, 33, and I had a chance to take a position where I could teach adults who did not have jobs, you know, to teach them computer skills. And it was one of the most rewarding thing I'd ever done. I did it for about 2 years, and I loved it every minute. And I especially loved graduation when they could actually go out and had the confidence to do the things that they needed.
It's always good to mentor somebody.
So. Yes, yeah. I was a big brother, and I hope my little brother's listening, but I doubt it. But that was a long time ago, too. So remember, big brothers and big sisters, especially if you don't have children and would like to help mentor a child, give them a call. You can look them up, big brothers and big sisters. So find someone, mentor them, or educate them. All you have to know to teach someone is more than the student.
There you go. Number 9, do not hoard your resources, especially if you have so many resources that you will not use them all in your lifetime. Give back.
What you were talking about a little earlier.
Exactly. I think I may have duplicated this Ten Commandment.
Or jumped ahead to it. But, yeah, it's a good rule. It's like, I don't know, planting a field of food. And so much so that it would be more than you could eat, but then keeping it all to yourself so that it would just go bad. I saw an article the other day online where it was talking about, I can't see how people put down democracy when I walk into a grocery store and see all the plenty that is there. The other side of that is, yes, democracy and capitalism can supply a huge amount of variety, but it's also a huge amount of waste. If people cannot afford to come into that store and pay the price for those supplements, fruits, vegetables, meat, whatever, they can't play it, they just go in the trash. And that's a huge amount of waste. A more socialist society would find a place for the food before it goes bad.
I used to work in a restaurant when I was in high school, and on one of the food items, we had chicken tenders. And if the chicken tenders sat in their container after they were cooked for more than 15 or 30 minutes, we had to throw them away. And like you said right there, that's a waste. Mm-hmm. You know, that's food that's still good that somebody could, you know, make use of. And Bill Clinton, in his Clinton Global Initiative, when it comes to the surgical equipment that's used for in hospitals, if the sealed containers of surgical equipment is on the shelf for too long, they actually have to throw it away. And technically, that surgical equipment is still good. Mm-hmm. So one thing he has done is gotten the surgical equipment that would have been thrown away, and they donate it to his initiative, and they use it in other countries. I'm not sure why the standards are so high that, you know, you can't use surgical equipment that, you know, even though it's been sealed, that has been around for that long, and there's a shelf life on it, but, you know, you can actually use it, and it has
been. Well, it may be something having to do with capitalism, too. You know, that all that equipment has to be replaced, you know, at a price. So I'm sure that some of the people making the rules have kept that in mind.
Probably.
Talking about back about the grocery store and the total waste there, you know, I said that if you had a socialist society, you know, they would make better use of that. It would make sure that it got to the people that it needed. But don't think of it as something that socialism would do. Think of it as something that Jesus would do.
It's a good way to look at it. Yeah. Jesus was the ultimate socialist.
Yeah. So do you have any more commandments on your list?
The last commandment, number 10, do not sit back and let others be mistreated when you know you can do something about it. Albert Einstein had a quote that he was famous for that is, he had good intentions in saying this. He said, "The world will not be destroyed by evil men, but by those who watch and do nothing." And I actually agree with parts of that quote and disagree with parts of it as well. The way he said it, he made it sound like he is placing more blame on people who do not do anything to prevent evil and less blame on the perpetrators themselves. And I think he probably could have structured that quote better to actually mean what he said, but his intentions were good. People who can do something about harm being done should do something. However, I would say that more blame should be placed on the actual perpetrators doing the harm rather than people who could have done something.
For sure. We've gotten to the bottom of the hour now. This is WOZO FM radio, low power, Knoxville, Tennessee. You can listen to us streaming online if you don't have a radio at your elbow sometime. Be sure to go to WOZOradio.com and you can listen there. We're going to take just a short break, listen to A. Camp sing Stronger Than Jesus. Continuing talking about the Ten Commandments. The atheists have their own sets of Ten Commandments, and they're really more like Ten Suggestions.
Exactly.
But Dawkins has his, Hitchens has his. John, you just got through reading yours. I've got some on my website, but I really stole them from the Ethical Atheist website, so there's 10 there.
But you did give him credit, so that works.
Yeah, I stole them, but I gave him credit. Is that really stealing? Anyway, so you've got some more to read to us. Which ones?
This is Richard Dawkins' version of the Ten Commandments. Number one, do not do to others what you would not want them to do to you. I think this is actually based on something Buddha said hundreds of years before Jesus came up with the Golden Rule, or the character of Jesus came up with the Golden Rule. And I actually think this is better than doing to others as they would have you doing, doing to others as you would have them doing to, doing to others as you would have them doing to you. I think this is better than that. This is do not do to others what you would not want them to do to you, which basically talks about harm and eliminating harm rather than, you know, things you think they would like to be done to them.
Actually, you could probably use them together for a good effect.
Probably combine them.
Yeah, that's right. No, it makes sense. You don't want people to do bad stuff to you, but then you'd like to have people do good stuff to you. So I think it works better than the original one, or the Golden Rule anyway. It's funny how the Golden Rule didn't make its way into the Ten Commandments. But I guess that there's a time problem there, you know. The Golden Rule came later, so... and most people don't realize that in the Old Testament, and I guess it was Exodus, God actually gave Moses two sets of golden Ten Commandments. He gave him one, he came down and dropped it, and then had to go back up the mountain and make some more. The second set is what we know. But you would think they'd be the same commandments, like God couldn't remember the first set? Please. But, I mean, the first set contained rules like, thou shalt not boil a kid in its mother's milk. How come that didn't make it to the second set? I can't imagine.
That was so bad they decided to scrap it, evidently.
I guess. They could have scrapped some of these, too.
And that was actually about a kid like a goat.
Yeah,
right? Not like a human child.
No.
Which is probably a crazy thing to warn about, but... number two, this is Richard Dawkins' Ten Commandments. In all things, strive to cause no harm. I think this is actually part of the Hippocratic Oath that doctors take. First, do no harm, and that may be one of the reasons that he included this in that.
Matter of fact, many, many times I'm asked by believers, what can you use as a standard of good? I mean, what can you use for morals if you don't listen to the Bible, you don't believe the Bible? Well, right there is the main one. Do no harm. You know, if you're doing harm to another fellow man, whether it's financial, physical, emotional, stop it. Don't do it. That's moral. And if your commandments tell you to harm somebody because it's God's word, then it's immoral. You know, don't do it. Don't harm people.
Simple as that. There's actually the parable of the Good Samaritan, and even the message of the parable of the Good Samaritan was... just because someone is not of the same faith as you are doesn't mean they can't be a good person. So essentially, you could use the Bible to say that, yes, atheists can be good people as well.
Yeah, like the Pope says to Pope Francis, says atheists can go to heaven. If you read the fine print, it's, yeah, if they turn Catholic.
I like to say about Pope Francis that out of all the popes who've existed in my lifetime, that Pope Francis is my favorite, and I hate them all.
Yeah. There's some real stinkers out there, too. If you have a few minutes, go to Wikipedia or whatever you want to study, except for maybe I wouldn't go to a Catholic site, and study the history of the popes. Not a list of... any more blackguards out there than the things that these people have done. In my opinion, the Catholic Church is the oldest crime syndicate in the history of the earth.
They're basically an organization that protects pedophiles.
Right.
And if Target had done this, if people at Target were molesting kids, Target would be shut down.
Yeah, but it's not even that.
Target
it's the fact
would shut
that
its
they,
doors.
They're selling a non-existent product. That's a scam. They have no evidence for the claims that they make, but they want your money in order to support their church and the claims that they make and the things that they do. And many people are doing exactly that, supporting them.
George Carlin said, when it comes to BS, major league BS, you have to stand in awe of religion.
Right. And go see the video. YouTube has that, many of them by George Carlin.
Number three, and Richard Dawkins' list of 10 commandments. Treat your fellow human beings, your fellow living things, and the world in general with love, honesty, faithfulness, and respect.
I can't imagine better than that. If you respect something, you're not going to harm it. You're not going to hurt it unnecessarily. I mean, there has to be conflicts where that person may be harming you even though you love them and you have to stand up for yourself. But no, I think it's a great rule. Certainly would make my list.
Number four, do not overlook evil or shrink from administering justice, but always be ready to forgive wrongdoing freely admitted and honestly regretted.
Yeah, that's the problem, though. Forgiveness is a double-edged sword. I mean, if you're a rapist, yeah, you'd like to be forgiven. You know,
but you're still a rapist.
It allows you to get off scot-free, you know, as long as you can get the person that you've harmed to forgive you. And many people actually do that to the point where they will not press charges. You know, I'm a good Christian. I've been told to forgive the person who trespassed against me, so I forgive him. No, I won't charge him. I won't press charges. And, you know, that works against society. The person's still out there, still doing the things that he's doing, hoping for forgiveness.
I actually think that our penal system, our justice system, when it comes to prisons and incarceration, that the system should be used to take people who have committed crimes and remove them from society so they can't commit those crimes again. And actually, I think that our prison system should be about rehabilitation rather than punishment. Because you could, you know, punish people all you want, but you know, if they're still bad people, they're, you know, they've still got that nature about themselves. But if you actually rehabilitate people and you give them a second chance, you can put them back into society and have more of a reassurance that they're not going to commit those same crimes. Sure. And you could do a lot more good that way.
Yeah, but we need to do that with a grain of salt. They have to give us a demonstration that they're honest in their desire to become rehabilitated. There are some people who are literally born without compassion.
There are some sociopaths out there, and those are the exception.
Yes.
You know, you could monitor somebody's activities while they're in prison and make a pretty good judgment as far as whether they have been rehabilitated or not, and you know, then make the decision whether or not you should release them back into society. Because as you said, some people, you know, there is no hope for them. That's just biologically how they're wired, and they're you know, they have no compassion, they have no empathy, and they just
those people we just have to put away. We have to keep away from society.
Yep. There are the exceptions, right?
Mm-hmm. So what have you got now?
Number five: live life with a sense of joy and wonder. And you can tell that this is a scientist writing this, because that is essentially the mindset of a science, is to live life with a sense of wonder and investigate how things work and find out how things operate, and the curiosity mindset of the scientist.
Right. Like Oprah Winfrey had that Cuban lady had... she had actually swum from Cuba.
Swimmer, I remember this story.
Yes, to Florida. And she had her on her show talking to her about her feet. And she was talking, she first found out that she was an atheist. The lady who did the swimming was an atheist. And then she said that, well, you know, what do you think about your feet? And she said, well, when I was standing on the shoreline, I felt awe of the world around me and the ocean that I just came through and the stars above me and all this. And Oprah said, well, you can't feel awe. You're an atheist. I mean, talk about a put down for all the people in the world who can't believe in God. When we feel awe of the universe all the time, especially if you're a scientist and you're investigating the universe. I mean, you're the person who actually knows how vast it is and how complex and all that, and you have awe. But Oprah and other believers just, you don't know God, you don't have awe. You know, that's BS. I mean, I'll tell you up front.
Oprah got on many atheists' bad side after that remark. Yeah. I remember a backlash in the atheist community.
Yeah. Well, I hope she learned something from that. It sure gets my hackles up every time I think about it.
A few people dropped out of her book club after that.
Yeah.
Number six, always seek to be learning something new. And I actually think this is a very good commandment because it teaches you not to be satisfied with what you know, and not to be satisfied with the status quo, so you can keep improving yourself and being beneficial towards society.
I always like to say, remember, school didn't end with the day you graduated. I mean, you've got the internet, the world at your fingers, all the world's knowledge is right there on your screen in front of you. Just all you have to do is ask the questions and read about it, watch the videos.
I think Mark Twain said something to the effect of that the best education you can have is self-education rather than, you know, not letting your schooling interfere with your education. I actually have a college degree, and I'm still saying that. You know, much of the things that I've learned that have benefited me, I've learned outside of college, so...
One of the biggest problems I have with church and organized religion is they teach you faith, and faith squelches your curiosity. It doesn't give you answers. It just stops you from asking the questions. Ask any kid going to church has 1,000 questions, and what are the answers that the church gives you? You shouldn't ask that. No, that's wrong. Don't think that. It's just, you know, be honest with the child. Tell them the answers that you have, and let them evaluate those. You might be surprised how some of the answers you're giving them don't stand up to reason.
Whenever I asked questions in church as a kid, I was always told, well, aren't you smart? You can ask God that when you get to heaven.
Right.
And there was no effort to answer my question, and there was no encouraging me to find out the answer to the question. It was just, hey, you can ask that question to God.
He was just being smart to stop you from asking the question.
Yep. Yeah. Number seven. Test all things. Always check your ideas against the facts, and be ready to discard even a cherished belief if it does not conform to them. And telling Larry off the air here a little while ago, we have Richard Dawkins' Ten Commandments, Christopher Hitchens' Ten Commandments, and my version of the Ten Commandments. And since all three of us are atheists, we've all made at least one commandment, some form of be skeptical. And I think, you know, that's a lot of self-realization right now, the self-awareness, should I say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my name on the air here is Doubter 5, and it's been Doubter 5 on many forums and other social media for a long time. But you need to be skeptical. Somebody tells you something, make them bring the proof with it, the evidence. Evidence is everything. Don't just let them say whatever and then you believe it. If somebody told you that they had a pet dog at home, well, you might believe that. That wouldn't cost you anything. And it would also, you know what dogs are, you know they exist, and that people keep them as pets. But if somebody had said, I have a pet dragon at home, would you believe them? Would you be a little skeptical? Would you ask for some proof? Especially if they start saying that it's an invisible dragon and that you have to give them money every week just to be able to talk about it, tell you more about it. Right.
People don't question, for the most part, people don't question what it is they believe, especially if they've been taught to believe that since they were a kid. Christopher Hitchens said, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and that is one of my favorite quotes of his.
That's true. the bigger the claim, the more evidence they should bring to support it. And God is real, or the all the kind. Excuse me, I'm getting tongue-tied. The Bible does not support claims made by you. You are repeating the claims in the Bible. It's the Bible that's making the claims. If you say the Bible proves it, then you're using circular knowledge, or circular reasoning, excuse me. The Bible is the claim. You've got to bring up some extra biblical claim or evidence to support those claims before I'll believe it.
Number 8, never seek to censor or cut yourself off from dissent. Always respect the right of others to disagree with you. And I think this is a very good thing to adhere to. One thing I always say is it's always important to expose yourself to people who disagree with you. I actually read books that I disagree with to find out if I'm wrong. I am now currently reading several books about religion. Some are in favor of religion, and some are anti-religion. And I'm pretty sure I'm right concerning my beliefs about and my understanding of how most of how religions are untrue. But I'm willing to read people who disagree with me, especially if they are of some, if their ideas are considered some merit in the respected communities, because I want to know if I'm wrong.
Right. The best way that you can make a name for yourself in the scientific community is to prove another scientist wrong. Many religious people out there think that science is one big body of men the world over who collude to put over these ideas that contradict the Bible, contradict
the claims. It's a big conspiracy theory, right?
Yes. But the best way that you could actually get to the top, and the most honored way, is to overturn some time-honored theory that's been that we've understood as truth, as scientific truth, for years and years. If a scientist could come up tomorrow and disprove evolution, he'd probably win a Nobel Prize for it and all the money and fame that goes with it. But they can't disprove it because it's real. It's a fact. And there's an old saying on the internet that says, God hates facts.
A little bit going after Westboro Baptist Church there for a second.
A little bit.
I like that. It was even William Lane Craig who said something to the effect of, if something comes along and contradicts the Bible, even if there is evidence for it, we must go back to the Bible and believe that rather than believe this something that's come along with evidence that contradicts the Bible. And that's, even though William Lane Craig is thought of to be the best at what he does, and I'll go ahead and say that I think that William Lane Craig is the Johnny Cochran of apologetics, because many consider him to be the best at what he does, and he's made his and he's best known for his defense of a famous murderer. He has a lot of bad ideas.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've lost my train of thought. I had something I wanted to talk about then, but it'll come back to me. I'll go on to the next one, if you will.
Okay. Number 9, form independent opinions on the basis of your own reason and experience. Do not allow yourself to be led blindly by others. And this part, thinking of not letting yourself be led blindly by others, again, goes after religion. In most religions, or at least in Christianity, there's the saying that, you know, the congregation is the sheep, and the shepherd is the pastor, or the shepherd is Jesus or God. And I don't like being called a sheep. I would rather, you know, think for myself and come to my own conclusions rather than being compared to one of the dumbest herd animals that exist, and saying that I need somebody to do my thinking for me.
Yeah, and how many politicians we have, especially on the Republican side right now, saying that we shouldn't really worry about man's law. It's God's law that's important. Never mind the Constitution. We've got the Bible, and that's what we're going to obey when we get into office. You should be afraid. You should be very afraid if that type of politician gets into office.
And just to ask real quick, how many minutes do we want to leave to end the show with? I've got Christopher Hitchens' Ten Commandments to go through real quick.
I'm not sure we'll be able to get to it because I do want to put a plug in for the atheist groups and that we have.
Okay.
Here, and then we'll have to end with a song.
All right. Number 10 for Richard Dawkins' Ten Commandments, we can end with this, I guess, is something that George Carlin always said that we should teach children to do, and that is question everything.
And they do. We've just got to give them honest answers. Don't throw them a bunch of BS. Don't just throw the Bible at them and say, read this, because there's really terrible stuff in the Bible. But answer them honestly and let them answer their objections honestly, too. They'll come up with some really good exceptions and objections. Be honest with them and don't tell them, don't ask that. They can ask anything they want. They're right. They're growing and learning. Okay, let me take just a second to talk about the atheist groups in Knoxville. There's the Atheist Society of Knoxville that meets every Tuesday at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in the Old City. That's for happy hour, for food, drink, and conversation, and camaraderie. It's Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria about 5:30 or 6, and we're usually there until about 8. That's the Atheist Society of Knoxville. The Rationalists of East Tennessee meet at Pellissippi State Campus off of Pellissippi Parkway near, what's the name of that road? Hardin Valley?
Hardin Valley Road. Yep.
Hardin Valley Road. Yep. Look for the signs and it'll take you to the door, but also you can go to their website, rationalist.org, to find the times and of their meetings and locations. Let's see. There's also the Sunday Assembly. If you like church, but you can't believe that stuff anymore, there's a group called the Sunday Assembly. They meet the last or the fourth Sunday in every month. I can't tell you where it is downtown, the actual name of the place. It's near the atrium, I believe. But go online, look for Sunday Assembly Knoxville, and you'll find out all the detail about it. Secular Student Alliance, look them up if you're a student and would like to get involved in a secular group in your school. Heaven knows there's plenty of religious ones. And that's about it. Is there anything you'd like to sign off with, John?
I'd just like to say that I've gone to Atheist Society of Knoxville's meetup on Tuesday nights at Barley's around 5:30, and I've come to really like and love those people that I meet with, and they're a great group. I went to Rationalist of East Tennessee's discussion the other day, had a great time. We went to Calhoun's afterward, and it's just a really good group of people. And for the past year or so, I've gone to Sunday Assembly when it meets at the, it's called the Valerium, is that right?
I think so.
The Valerium.
Yeah.
And we've actually moved to a new location, which is the Valerium. It's a great time. If you are an atheist and actually miss the concept and the community aspect of church, this is basically church for atheists. It's a church without religion. So you can go to that and get out of it just what you got out of church when you're a Christian.
And I'm going to sign off with Big Butter Jesus. I like that. It sticks in my mind. So here we go.
In southern Ohio, just north of Cincinnati, I beheld a vision next to the expressway. Was a 60-foot Jesus with his hands in the air. Looked like he's carved out of butter, just like at the state fair.
Big Butter Jesus, sweet green Jesus.